Don't you hate pants?
Welcome to another episode of Giles and Goalies Podcast. I hope this makes it to the internets this week. We don't have to go back and reluctantly record over Skype again.
Why are you making me relive this pain?
As much as Ben wants to have his cat Felix join the show again. we're at Grumpy's again. Ben wearing his infamous Make Baseball Fun Again hat.
Mm-hmm.
Matching it with a good North Star shirt. Say hello, Ben.
Hello.
Does that every time. We have a special guest this week for our loyal listeners. I lost my train of thought. I was going to make some kind of...
We were hammering the bingo card earlier this week.
Yeah. No, it'll be a full... Full card. Special guest, she has written for
everyone.
Wild Extra, and I believe I've seen the Pioneer Press somewhere in there. Am I right?
Sure.
Ooh.
Oh.
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 Right.
Okay. Sweet. Sweet Chicago Tribune brag. No, that's a fellow Wild Extra writer, Heather Rule. Straight from the Target Field, where I was also today, where we endured the Twins 3-1 loss to Toronto.
We had the one game win streak.
On my way to the game today, me and my friend... We were reciting the Lou Brown speech from Major League 2, where he goes, "All right, let's listen up. We won a game yesterday. We win one today, that's two in a row. We win one tomorrow, that's called a winning streak." Well, we didn't quite get that far. No, it was funny at the time when we were quoting the reference. But
did they win three in a row one time? Well, they swept a series, didn't they, like randomly... Yeah. They swept the Angels, like, out of nowhere, and then...
That was their first win.
That's, like, 40% of their wins right now.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's pretty track.
Yeah.
You know, there's that 4-game win streak. They got a win in Houston, a win in Milwaukee,
4
against Cleveland,
1
against Toronto.
Cool. And the Angels, who just signed Tim Lincecum, and half of their pitchers are getting Tommy John, like, next week, so that's a good look.
Yeah, and plenty of Canadians at the ballpark today. No shortage of dem hosers at the ballpark. I think they had Twins fans numbered. To be honest,
that's weird to me. That, like, I mean, it's not like it's super far from Toronto, but that so many of them would travel to Minneapolis for a series like that, or they're just that somehow there's so many of them in this area, which I don't know that it's that, but. I suppose, yeah.
And there's some kind of Canadian holiday tomorrow.
Oh.
So it was a long weekend for people.
Oh.
So
that's nice.
Gotcha.
That's the thing, is like, the Blue Jays aren't just exclusive to Toronto. It's basically Canada's team.
True, yeah, well, since the Expos
there's
left,
no
especially.
Expos. Rest in peace, Expos.
It's a little weird on Thursday, though, because we started out with the Anthems, and they had O Canada.
Yeah, you don't commonly hear that at a baseball game, sure.
It was weird. That's right.
Actually, now that I think of it, you are right. There was a good amount of Winnipeggers in the stands today. It's when they were doing the rendition of O Canada, they all shouted very loudly, "True North."
Yeah.
That's a dead
Winnipeg
giveaway.
Thing, yeah. Okay. We all know how well the Jets fans travel down here, so.
It was also UND Day at the ballpark.
You went to that?
And let me voice. It was part of my ticket plan, Ben. Get off my lawn.
I can't believe you actually, put yourself through that.
I held out of watching the opening ceremonies.
Well, obviously.
I got there at first pitch.
I did
go by the hockey team as they were coming up the elevator.
Oh.
But I had to show restraint since I wanted to hang around for the rest of the day.
Remember when we were at NCHC and we walked by all the just super dejected Sioux fans after Duluth beat them in the first round of that tournament? We're just walking through the concourse at Target Center, and it's just Sioux fans left and right, Sioux jerseys everywhere, and they're all just looking like they're about to cry because they lost the first round of their tournament.
Ben, it's not that name.
Oh,
they're called Fighting Hawks. Hawks.
Yeah, my experiences there beg to differ because nobody has told anybody from North Dakota that they changed the name.
See, if you tell a UND fan your nickname's the Fighting Hawks, they get angry.
So, I mean, it's a good way to start a fight, though.
Yeah.
So,
I almost did once, as we remember. I guess we can venture into some wild talk since they're a relatively stable team in this town. I'm just kidding. They're not. I know last couple of weeks we talked about UFAs and RFAs, and I guess maybe today we can kind of look at some players on the Wild roster who are candidates to be traded, and we probably hit on that at some point, at least maybe last week with the RFAs.
Yeah, we mentioned it briefly with the RFAs last week, but we didn't really go too in-depth with who the Wild might be dealing this year, and then as far as who they're going to trade for, that's kind of like a needle in the haystack situation. So we can do a little bit of research and maybe bring up some names next week, but this week we'll just focus on the Wild players that are prime candidates to leave town, unfortunately. Or fortunately.
If you're at home and you're trying to think of players the Wild will trade, you can start by crossing off Koivu, Parisi, Suter, Vanek, or Pominville from that list.
Yeah.
They're not being traded.
Yeah, you know, I don't think they can really deal Pominville in his contract. It's possible that they could deal Vanek because he's only got a year left on that deal. If there is one team, I mean, look at the Sabres last year and the Panthers. I mean, it was basically like winning the lottery, getting picked to be signed by those guys because they were trying to hit the cap floor. So they were just giving absurd amounts of money to very mediocre players. So maybe if you can find a situation like that where a team is trying to get up to that cap floor, you can dump off Vanek on somebody for just one more season because that's all he has left. He has one season and a high price. So that might be kind of attractive. It's kind of like the expiring salary thing that they do in the NBA all the time, where they do just ridiculously absurd trades, and all you have to do is, trade a retired player, and somehow it makes the trade balance out money-wise. That could be a possibility for Vanek. I don't think it happens, but, certainly he's more likely to be dealt than, obviously, like you mentioned, Parisi, Suter, Koivu, Pominville. So, but don't get your hopes up. If you're an ardent Vanek hater, Judd, don't get your hopes up.
There's plenty of those out there. Wow, you made an NBA reference.
I did.
Solid.
It's just because, you hear about that.
What have you been doing in the offseason?
You just hear about that stuff all the time, the NBA. You know, when the Wolves got Latrell Spiro, they, traded, Trell Brandon or something like that for him. They traded a terrible player. Ooh. Who was making, decent money, but he had an expiring contract, so apparently that's super attractive to an NBA team. I don't know, the NBA's finances are so goofy and wonky, and their trades are so weird because of that, because, the money has to be exactly equal on each side, which is kind of dumb when you think about it, that kind of stuff happens all the time. So you, get players unretiring only to be traded, and then they re-retire, and they make, $200,000 to be traded. It's bizarre. Which I think is fitting with Vanek, so.
Yeah. That's got to be the first NBA reference we've had on this podcast.
Maybe.
But possible. So I guess, I don't know, maybe looking at forwards for tradable assets. I don't know. I know Michael Russo threw it out there on his podcast last week that maybe you look at trading Nino Niederreiter, which would probably upset a lot of people, me included. But
what context did he say that in?
His name definitely made it out.
Yeah. Right. He basically said he's probably your most tradable asset.
Well, yeah, but that doesn't mean that you have to deal him.
Right. I thought I would.
It's like saying Miguel Sano is the Twins' most tradable asset. Well, of course he is. A lot of teams would love to have him.
Nice.
That's bizarre to me because it's like, yeah, he is the most tradable asset because he's only got, what, like a year left on his bridge deal. It's like $3 million or something like that, or $2 million. And obviously he had a pretty good year, and even when you look deeper, as the fancy stats community would tell you, he was one of the Wild's best players, if not the best player in the Wild last season. So, yeah, he's the most tradable asset. But I think if you deal him, I can't even fathom a deal where you're getting the better end of the deal if you deal him. It would have to be some kind of black magic voodoo type stuff going on there to dupe another team into dealing one of the best players in the NHL, Foligno.
Niederreiter for Ovechkin. Go. Deal.
He wants to play for Bruce again. That's the deal.
Yes. Any thoughts? Any thoughts on Niederreiter being traded? No, I agree. You're trading, you know, arguably your best player all of last season. Mm-hmm. You know, he was very good in the beginning of the year, and then he had a little stretch there in between where, you know, he wasn't great, or he wasn't good for that matter. But then, you know, in the last seemingly half of the season, he turned it up again, and you know, I think I referenced this last week. I forget what I actually said because we had about 15
records.
Because
we podcasted
records.
Twice for almost 3 hours. So.
I lost again.
But I think the problem with Nino is that he's an underrated player when you look at him versus the rest of the league. Like, as we alluded to with the whole fancy stats thing, like he just didn't get enough ice time to put up the kind of numbers that he maybe should have. You know, he's getting 14 minutes a game. Yeah, he's not going to be a 30-goal scorer. He still almost was a 30-goal scorer,
he could
getting
be.
12, 13, 14 minutes a game. Yeah,
that's what I was going to say.
You don't deal players like that. Like, that's the player that a smart team goes
right.
after. And hopefully you're not a dumb team and you deal a player like that.
I was going to say, it's the second straight summer where you're basically saying, all right, you give Niederreiter more ice time, he could be a 30-goal scorer.
Yeah.
We didn't see that.
Well, and it didn't happen because he didn't get the ice time this year.
Right.
You never saw him over 17 minutes, I don't think.
Niederreiter didn't get any ice time this year. Hashtag fire yo.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
So then if he does get dealt over the summer, we can pretty much guarantee that he's going to get more ice time next year.
Oh, yeah.
Score
yeah.
Is that
funny? Yeah. That's Minnesota
that's
sports
exactly
in a nutshell.
Not different. It won't go south at all. It'll just,
it'll
just be... very good for the team he's on.
He'll be healthy all year, for sure. He won't get injured.
All right. He'll be in a top
yeah.
line. He'll make the All-Star game.
Yep.
So then moving on from there, you know, you've got a lot of players kind of in the same realm of Nino, where they're on bridge deals right now and you know, with obviously not as good results as Nino. What do we think about Granlund? He just had a pretty impressive World Championship tournament with a point in every game except for the gold medal game. And but that's what he does. He excels in tournaments in international play and in the playoffs. And then in the regular season, he scores, what, 11 goals? And, you know, looks mostly lost. So, do you think... I mean, he's kind of a situation where it's like, yeah, you can make the whole change of scenery argument for him, but do you want to do that when you have Bruce Boudreau coming in next season? I don't know that you do.
Well, that's tough because Boudreau sees him as a center, and that's what he said. I mean, he could obviously go look at the film and then change his mind. But if you hold on to him and you hold him as a center, then you're going into the year with, you know, two number two centers, one of which will have to be your top center.
Like, yep.
You can't do that again. You got to get a number one center. And yep. We've beaten that to death in the last few weeks. You know, if you move him to the wing, great. I think he'll do all right there. Oh, God.
Giles is getting free drinks handed to him here. This is going to get dangerous.
Yeah. It's going to get real good pretty quick here. But, no, you move Granlund to the wing, great, but I think... You know, maybe you try to move him this summer when he has still some kind of value, and maybe somebody watching the World Champions will go, maybe we should take a flyer on him, because I think at the least he's maybe worth a higher draft pick, maybe not a first, but maybe a second or something like that. But
yeah,
I wouldn't be opposed to it. He seems to maybe have a better build for the Eastern Conference.
That's true, and you know, as Matt, I mean, he tears up every international competition that he's in. It's bizarre, but you know, as some people that'll tell you, especially the people who are not really fans of Mike Yeo, you know, there's kind of a fair amount of proof out there that Yeo suppressed quite a bit of offense. Granlund probably chief amongst that. I mean, you saw when Torch took over what that did for Eric Halla, what that did for Jason Pominville. Even Granlund seemed to play a little better offensively after Torch took over. And Torch, I don't think by any stretch, is known to be an offensive dynamo or anything like that. Not like Boudreau, at least. So, I don't know. I think dealing him this summer, not that I would be wholeheartedly against it. I think if the right deal is there, maybe you take it. But maybe you're missing out on seeing what he can do with a coach that might suit his game a little bit better. I mean, I don't know that he's going to become Nicklas Backstrom, the good center one, that is. I don't know if he's going to become Nicklas Backstrom overnight, but he might come a lot closer to him now that he's not in a very strict defensive system.
So I should expect him in Geico commercials is what you're telling me.
He's just so marketable with that serial killer face that he has.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And even the success here in the playoffs where looks like a totally different player, that almost just makes you even more mad, because it's like, why don't you play like this the rest of the time? And, you know, you can say that about other guys too, I suppose, but I don't see the effort from him. I don't get it. You know, you see him get the puck, you see him get pushed off, and you just expect him to get pushed off the puck, and that part is so frustrating. But there is that curiosity in me now with the coach that does really want to see him. Like, okay, give him a chance here. It's like, okay, maybe you can do something with groups as the coach. Is it really going to be that much of a change for him, or is it just going to be the same guy that we've seen all year?
Yeah.
So,
I don't think you were alone.
Yeah, probably not.
That's the danger of dealing somebody when you've got a big coaching change. I mean, this is a pretty significant coaching change. I mean, even if you like Mike Yeo a lot, you can't argue that from his style to Boudreau's is going to be vastly different. And that's the thing with Granlund, is like, it's a pretty good question if he changes at all, because I think maybe the problems that he had, more than anyone, were kind of his own doing. You know, you saw a lot of indecisiveness from him. Whenever he got the puck, it looked like he was you know, it looked like he was trying to finish a Sudoku puzzle before he actually passed, or he you couldn't pay the guy to shoot as soon as the puck hit his stick. You know, the puck would hit his stick, and he'd circle the net, you know, three times, or he'd maybe stick hand a little bit, and it's just like, just shoot one time, just see how you like it, just try it, maybe you'll like it.
He tried and failed to go to the Dwayne Robertson School of stick handling around on the power play.
Wow. Okay.
That's a good Mighty Ducks reference.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm going to pat myself on the back for that.
It's not bad.
He's been the most frustrating player, not just this year, but in the last 3 years. You know, built up as center of the future.
Well, that's
he's going to do big things and hasn't done anything yet. And now you're at the point where you just wonder, is he ever going to do anything to go to that next step?
That's what's hardest to build up, really. Because,
yeah.
You know, these guys come in and it's, you know, what you hear about them and what the media says about them. And he was supposed to come in and be this, you know, superstar and really haven't seen an average or below average hockey player most of the time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the expectations, I think, make it worse because it wasn't like you were just expecting some guy who's going to come in and, you know, get a few points for you.
Yeah. But he was, that was whatever, because everyone always kind of pissed and moaned about Koivu being a number one center, even though we all knew the whole time he wasn't really a number one center. He's been a great number two center his entire career, but he's had to play at the top line center because we haven't had a top line center. And that was the allure of Granlund, was that, oh, he's going to come in, he's going to be the top line center. He'll push Koivu down to number two, which is where Koivu belongs, and then that really hasn't happened. He's certainly played center on the top line a lot, but really has never produced to justify that. So.
I'm going to disagree. I think there was a time when Koivu was a number one center. It hasn't been in the last few years. But I think, like, the lean Todd Richards years.
Yeah.
I think he was a number one center.
I don't know. Maybe he was. I mean, he certainly produced a lot better then because he was the only player on the team. So if you were to track puck possession, I think he had the puck a lot because he had nobody else to pass it to. So. Maybe you're right about that, but still, it still, you know, the people who didn't like Koivu back then that was the promise, was that Granlund was going to come in, he was going to be our top line center, and that would make Koivu a lot much better fit on the second line. So, that's probably enough Granlund time. we'll see if he's moved to wing. I mean, that's just it. That's another. I mean, he's kind of a Rubik's cube this summer because either he gets dealt or he gets moved to wing or he stays here and stays the center. I mean, it's kind of, you've got more options with him. You know, we really don't know what he's going to be this fall as opposed to a few other players. So we can move on to another player.
Looks like we got maybe two more here at forwards.
Sure.
I mean, I don't necessarily think the Wild would be interested in moving him, but, you know, Charlie Coyle has a...
Yeah.
Relatively nice, movable contract without a, one of the no trade clauses.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm sorry. The big omelet.
How dare you forget our own nickname? That still hasn't caught on for some reason.
Yeah, it never will.
It will, damn it. Give it time.
He's a big omelet. Body, net front presence kind of guy, and, you know, if he could. Maybe if you move him, you know, somebody probably just says, okay, you're a wing.
Right.
And you just leave him there. He'll probably do good for you. I don't know what kind of return you'd fetch.
Yeah. And I think as far as Wild players go, just kind of the fact that he got such an extension that he got, I think this team is really high on Coyle. And rightfully so. But I think that, I mean, this team is looking at building around him for the future. What drink is that? Is that whiskey and pineapple?
There was some. And that sip, there was a large amount of whiskey that I did not expect.
I knew you were recoiling over the coil talk, but yeah, I think this seems really super high on him, and I think that they're, at least Chuck Fletcher is, you know, looking to build around him for the future. That's why he got, I mean, he's signed through 2020, for Christ's sake.
They almost have to be high on him just to salvage the Brent Burns trade.
Well, that's very true. That, I mean, that's a save, because if they deal Coyle for, you know, I mean, you would get a good return for him, but then that just makes the Burns deal look way worse. If you deal him, even if you get a first, you know, that's essentially the Zach Phillips first, so, you know, whoop-de-doo. And, yeah, that makes him look real bad. So, I think Coyle's here to stay. Even probably most likely of any of the young players, he's here to stay.
Yeah, I would agree. Like I said, it's tough for me to see them moving him, but, you know, you never know what the return could be. So, you know, I don't think it's impossible, but, you know, it's very unlikely.
Yeah, I think he's definitely going to be sticking around. I think, like you said, I think they put a lot of stake in having him here. I think if he were to be traded, I think it would be really surprising for everybody. We would have to see what are we getting for this. I mean, and you're right, it would make the Burns trade look even worse than it already does.
Yeah.
So they probably don't want to do that. And yeah, just I think they're going to keep him around. I'm still waiting to see more from him.
Sure.
He's been, you know, a pretty decent player, but there's still... I want him to have more of that net front presence. You know, I kind of get sick of seeing Freezy get pushed around in front of the goal crease all the time, and then, I mean, I want to see Coyle in there.
Yeah.
I want to see him in there, blocking the goalie's vision, you know, making sure that guys are pushing around.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, and that's the thing with him is that that's been the main criticism of him the whole time is that he's like 6'3", 225, and he plays like he's, you know, Granlund-sized, roughly. I mean, you don't see him really get a whole lot of garbage goals. He'll get a couple every now and then, but he doesn't play like Parisi plays, and Parisi is much smaller than Coyle. So, yeah, it'd be nice to see him. Yeah, I think that's what happens when you move him to the wing permanently. And he's able to do that. And I think that's what you saw out of him when he was on the wing this year. When he had, you know, when he was playing with the center who could get him the puck a little bit in front of the net. I think you saw a little bit of that. Not much, but I think you saw a little bit of that. And if we can just get him some continuity where he's at the wing, you know, a lot of the times, and he can get a guy feeding him the puck in front of the net, I think good things are going to happen for him.
Oh, I'd agree to that. And I guess our last forward here on the list, like I said, these players I think would be traded.
Mm-hmm.
We went very heavy on him last week in our RFA mm-hmm. discussion was Jason Zucker.
Mm-hmm.
More so just because, just trade him so we don't have to hear about, will Zucker be lost in an expansion draft process? No, I'm just kidding.
He's going to Vegas.
Like I said, we hit on this really hard last week, and I think if there was anyone on this roster who cries out change of scenery is needed, it's probably him. And, you know, coming out of last year, we looked at him as a potential 30-goal scorer, and this year now you're just wondering, you know, could he even be a 20-goal scorer? And
mm-hmm.
it's... You just saw a lot of negative things from him, and, you know, like I said last week, he just... seems to be more of a one-dimensional player, that Carl Hagelin light, if you will. And, you know, he would probably fit well with an Eastern Conference team.
No.
So I would think you'd move him and get whatever you could in return, and it'd be really, I think you said it, a sell-low kind of a deal. But
yeah. I don't know what you could get in return for him at this point. You might be looking at a third-round pick for him. I don't think you can garner a second. I have no idea, though. Just anything more than a third would surprise me, to be honest. And again, it kind of goes back to the Granlund talk. It's like, well, you know, you do have Bruce Boudreau coming in here, but as I think we mentioned this in the Lost podcast, unfortunately, Boudreau had Hagelin last year. And Zucker, as you said, is kind of a Carl Hagelin light, where he's just kind of speed and can't finish. And Boudreau traded Hagelin last year. Maybe he was more up to his GM than anything, but you know, it certainly didn't work out for Hagelin and Anaheim, and I don't know, not to say that it can't work out for Zucker under Boudreau, but yeah, change of scenery might be the way to go. And the fact that, you know, you've got him, he's an RFA, so you have to re-sign him, and I don't know that he's up for a big raise at all, but any raise that he would get is going to count against the salary cap, against that spare $10 million that you only have sitting around right now. And if you go out and you trade a defender, as you know, we may get to, if you trade a defender for a forward, that creates a little bit of a logjam in your top nine, and Zucker's a pretty easy guy to bail out of because he's the only one that's not under contract for next season so far. So it does make a lot of sense. If it actually happens or not remains to be seen, but it does make a lot of sense why they would end up dealing him this summer, especially if they go out and acquire a forward for one of their defenders.
I just didn't really understand it because I saw his speed, I saw, you know, the spark I thought he could bring the team, and last year it seemed like he was doing really well, and then this year, I mean, along with other players too, I don't think he was the only one, but just not taking that step forward, and it was frustrating to see that because I always thought, you know, he was going to be on his way up and have the potential to, you know, become a great player, and then it didn't happen. I know he was, people were down on him for his defense, which I understand. I don't know. I wasn't seeing that as much the way everyone else thought, I guess. I appreciate what he brought as far as this being just kind of that offensive mindset that I think he has.
And, yep.
I appreciate that for him. You know.
Probably doesn't have a whole lot of offensive mindset.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like going in with the puck and stops with it at the surface because you wait for your teammates to catch up,
yep,
or you send it behind the net or whatever, and he would drive the net. So, you know, I don't really know what happened this year. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he was not back. I hope he has a, you know, I would like to see him stay here and hopefully get a chance to redeem himself. But.
Yeah. At the very least, you know, maybe increase his stock a little bit. If he's not a player that you have tabbed as a long-term guy, I mean, he's an RFA, so you can still very much give him a bridge deal. And then, you know, if he goes out this season and does have a 30-goal season or even a 20-plus goal season like he had last year, then you've got a lot more value wrapped up in him. I don't know that he is a 30-goal scorer, but we'll see. But, you know, It certainly can't go much worse than it went last season. And so maybe the value that you're looking at is roughly the same. I'm not sure. What? Why are you upset?
Music.
Oh, I got headphones on so I don't even notice. I can barely make it out. Ah, the Fratellis. Everyone's favorite Chicago goal song band. I thought it was something I said, so I'm
happy that
wasn't the case.
No, I agree on Zucker. You know, maybe you hope to see him come back and redeem himself, but to me, at some point, somebody's got to be moved. Because
yeah,
you can't return with this team. And
yeah. Well, you could. But.
Well, you could, but then you'd be...
Then the pitchforks and torches mob would be extra big.
The mob would be out in full force.
Yeah.
But I...
Yeah. To the point where I feel like I've, you know, analyzed and overanalyzed it so much. It's like, here's these players and what, you know, what are the pros and cons with everybody? Who could they move? And who has to stay? And it's just kind of like, well, let's see what they do, I guess. And then I'll react to it and probably be upset about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just to the point where it's like, let's see what move they make. Because there's not, like, one player that stands out to me as like, okay, this is the guy we gotta move, or these are the guys that gotta stay. And, you know, of the ones that could be traded, I just, you know, you can see reasons for why they could stay or go. There's not one in particular that's really sticking out as, yeah, this is the guy, let's get rid of him, we can get something for him, let's trade him.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough thing with him. It's and with all the players too. It's you don't know you know, I think they are going to make a big move because they've got and they've got a month before the draft yet. And I think if they do, it'll likely be before the draft, before the draft, number one, because of draft picks, and number two, before free agency starts, and they've got a whopping $10 million to go out and sign, basically, a whole fourth line, along with re-signing some of their RFAs. So I do think they make a big move, and I think it happens relatively quickly. It'll happen, you know, that little window between the cup final and the draft is a busy one for hockey, so I think that we're going to see quite a bit happening in that rough 2 weeks or whatever it is.
Yeah. I had one unrelated note to anything before we move into the defenseman who we could potentially move. My friend that just walked in the bar here, Ben, mm-hmm. wanted to know if we were still hating on James Taylor. After all
wow.
this time.
That's a first episode throwback right there.
Yep.
That's
our first... Our first episode we recorded at, what was that, McGovern's?
Yes.
In St. Paul. And yeah.
Which was bonus
it was. We didn't know that there was a James Taylor concert going on that night, so we were trying to do this with all the James Taylor fanatics in the bar.
Yeah. So like it's me, him, and Charlie, and John, and we go into a bar, we go into McGovern's, and it's exactly the crowd that you would expect
yep.
for James Taylor
It was
Taylor
very
concert.
Stereotypical.
It was hilarious how stereotypical that crowd was.
And, yeah, I think we titled the podcast, like, James Taylor Sucks or something to that extent.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, that was my weird note here
so,
before we move
before
on.
Before you finish forwards, you're not going to talk about your boy or what?
I knew I forgot
you skipped
somebody.
Over? You're just going to skip over? You're going to pretend like it's not going to happen? Like there's 0%
chance? I don't want to talk about it. Not at all.
To your point, I don't think that...
Let me take a giant drink.
We're talking about Eric Halla.
Dan, turn off the next 2 minutes.
Yeah. I don't... To you know, not to... You know, blow smoke up here or whatever, but I don't think he's dealt. You know, he's on a pretty affordable deal right now. He's an RFA next summer, and what you saw out of him in the Torchetti era was pretty awesome. So I think you'd be rather foolish to deal him at this point.
Yeah, I don't think he'll be moved because his cap hit is $1 million, and, you know, considering what we've seen from him, you don't move that for that kind of value, and especially considering they're going to be hard against the cap next year, I don't think he'll be moved. But if they do move him, pray for Dan. I'm going to put a 56 tattoo over my heart.
You're going to be wearing a black armband for like the entire season if we deal Eric Halla, just in yeah. mourning permanently.
I'll bring a sign to every game. Free Halla.
Yep. But, I can move it on to defenseman, I guess, no?
The big, talker of defenseman, I guess, who could be moved this summer is Jonas Brodin, and the more I've thought about it, the more I just don't know if he'll be moved. And, you know, it's a legitimate concern that maybe teams don't value him as much as the Wild do, and right. or even close. And you know, I think we also talked about this last week. And,
yeah.
you know, they thought they were the front runners of the Ryan Johansson sweepstakes, and it only took Seth Jones to sweep the rug right out from under him because right. the Wild were just dangling Jonas Brodin, who probably has as many career points as Jones had this season. and, you know, especially considering his 5 year left on his deal and $4 million cap hit. I can't imagine many teams are going to be, you know, really chomping at the bit to trade for him.
Right. And that's the thing with him is that he's such a weird case because his numbers look pretty awful when you look at, you know, he doesn't produce virtually anything by the way of points, so you can't even really look at that. And then you look at the, you know, the more advanced metrics in puck possession and whatnot, and that looks pretty bad too because he just really does not play any offense whatsoever. So you're kind of, you know, you can't judge him based on stats alone because you see him play defensively and you know he's a really good defensive player. But, you know, of course he measures shots for and shots against. And he takes so little shots for that he looks like a bad defensive player at the end of the day because he has absolutely no offense whatsoever. But you know, in his own zone, you know, he's one of the best defenders that the Wild have. I mean, he really is like a Suter type clone. Just, you know, whatever you do, don't pair him with Suter because then you've got a problem on your hands. But so it's interesting. I wonder how other teams value him. As we know, analytics is getting a lot more popular with NHL teams, but at the same time, they still have scouts. They still have guys in the stands that are watching him play and watching his defense, and I think that there's probably a lot of teams out there that do like him. It's just a question of how much. And if he was close to netting the Wild Ryan Johansson, yeah, maybe he is highly sought of. I mean, we heard at the deadline that teams were calling the Wild for Brodin, not the other way around. So I don't know, but then, as you mentioned, you know, Boudreau mentioned last week that he's excited to coach him. So you got to kind of wonder if that was a conversation that him and Fletcher had in the infancy of Boudreau's talks here about Brodin and whatnot, and if Boudreau really likes him, then maybe he's more apt to stay. Right.
But yeah, for defense, I think maybe it's one of those cases where you just, you know, he's not one of the big name players, you're not going to necessarily notice him. It, you know, it sticks out if he makes a mistake, for sure, but I could see him mistaking, no problem. I think, you know, that's a few other defensemen that maybe they'd be looking to move beforehand.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the kind of thing when Boudreau said that, everyone's focus immediately shifted from they're trading Brodin this summer to they're trading Scandella this summer. And that's just kind of what that comment, the effect that comment had, because everyone knows that Boudreau saying that doesn't just come out of, I mean, to his credit, maybe it did just come out of thin air. But either way, it has an effect on people's perception of the summer.
Well, that's a good segue to our next defenseman on the list of
it's like I've done this
for
before.
Marco Scandella, and you're killing it with the transitions today. and I think I kind of touched on it last week that he might be your more tradable defenseman at this point, if you know at all. And I can't imagine teams, you know, value Jared Spurgeon as highly as the Wild do, and.
Well, maybe they do.
You know, and more of that probably has more to do with his size, unfortunately, yeah, than it does anything. But, you know, Scandella didn't have the greatest of seasons. But, you know, we know what he can do when he's on his game. And, you know, maybe he is the one that gets moved to get maybe a package of some kind of decent return. Maybe a number one center. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. But, the thing with him is that, yeah, especially towards the tail end of the season, he was, you know, kind of pedestrian and very not noticed. But then we also found out right after the playoffs that he was playing with a hernia the whole time. So that's, you know, that's not very conducive to playing hockey well, unfortunately, as Thomas Vanek proved last season, that if you have a hernia, it makes it kind of hard to produce and it makes it kind of hard to skate and et cetera. But yeah, I think Scandella is a relatively attractive defenseman for other teams. You know, his contract is similar to that of Brodin and Spurgeon's, but he's got size, unlike Spurgeon, and he's got offense, unlike Brodin. So you know, he's got a good shot from the point. He hasn't produced a lot of points, but he's also, I don't know, he even sniffed the power play this season, maybe a couple of times at most, but that was about it. So, I don't know what, it'd be interesting to know how much other teams value him, if they value him as much as the Wild do, and if he really is, you know, the defenseman that's going to be dealt this summer. You know, maybe the disparity between how much he's valued here and elsewhere is really found out.
I think with him, it's definitely a case of, you know, what other teams see. You know, I think with him, he has a good shot. He has defense, even because he didn't have the greatest season. But I think it could be attractive for other teams. I mean, keep coming back to just the same old thing with all these guys, that it's just, it's hard because you know what they can do at their best. You know, we've seen these guys perform and do good things, and then, you know, now it's like this year, everyone kind of was on the downslide, it seemed like, and it's frustrating because you know they can be that good, and so the Minnesota sports
David Ortiz, David Ortiz.
Get over it, Ben. That was 13 years ago.
Never. Yeah, for sure.
I guess, I don't know, we did kind of briefly discuss Jared Spurgeon, but, I mean, this is his last season where he doesn't have any kind of no-move clause in his contract.
Right.
So, theoretically, you could move him if you really wanted to, but, like I said, you know, the Wild value him so highly because, you know, they found him for nothing, and
right,
he's been a great defenseman for him, and, you know, I think they'd have to get a really ridiculous offer to consider moving him, and I just don't see it.
Yeah, and last summer it was all the talk that he was going to be dealt. Like, it was, you know, locked and loaded almost last summer because of he was the only defenseman left without a contract, and then he gets a contract. And, you know, Fletcher basically said at the time when he got the extension that, yeah, this opens us up so we can deal any of our defensemen now, basically is almost verbatim what he said. And we know that the Wild, you know, dipped into the analytics pool by hiring the founders of War on Ice, and how Spurgeon is a player who is analytics darling. I mean, he is, you know, if you had to rank the analytics darlings on the Wild, he would probably
Spurgeon
be number one. Yeah, he'd be one, and it wouldn't be close to second place. So,
Justin Fontaine, too.
Fontaine would be up there, yep. But, so, you know, they obviously value the opinion of those guys they hired, of A.C. Thomas and his crew. So, it'll be interesting to see. I don't think he's dealt either for those reasons. I think if they wanted to deal him, they probably wouldn't have extended him. So I think that they've kind of bought into, whether it's an analytics thing or not, they've bought into it long term. And Spurgeon really kind of backed it up. He had a pretty good year. Again, you know, he didn't produce a ton, but at the same time, it's still a defenseman. So, you're not, the bar isn't super high. But I think he played well. He was almost without a doubt the best defenseman on the ice in the Dallas series, which, you know, again, probably not necessarily saying much, but I think they hold on to him. I think that he's here to stay, and you know, maybe his size scaring away other teams turns out to be one hell of a bounty for the Wild. Except those Tempstar commercials.
Well,
yeah. I got time to work on that.
No, he looks like he's 12.
Yeah.
Is that like his
Right. Are those his actual kids? I mean, he's only, what, like 25?
So. Yeah.
Those kids look like they're 8 or 10.
He's got
10.
Two kids.
Well, right, but they look a little... Yeah, because he's so... Yeah, that... And then the whole opening the water for his wife and then handing it back. It's like, oh, my God.
Please don't tweet at his wife.
Yes. Oh, God. It'd be way less funny if it didn't actually happen. Yeah. He's an NHL defenseman. That's what you got to have your eyes up. You got to be looking up the ice at all times.
I wonder how many takes that took. So
yeah, just oh Jesus! There's shots going by. Hide, Giles. Hide.
But okay, who's been the better temp star spokesperson?
Oh, between
was
him
it
and
Cal Clutterbuck?
Clutterbuck.
Was it Ryan Suter or is it Jared Spurgeon?
You know, oddly enough, the way that Clutterbuck played, you would have thought that he would be able to show a little bit more emotion in a TV commercial because he plays like he's on fire. So you'd think that maybe he'd have some personality shine through in a TV spot? No. No. He was as emotionless as Ryan Suter, which you totally expect out of Ryan Suter. But you didn't expect that out of Cal Clutterbuck. And then Spurgeon is just, yeah, he's Jared Spurgeon. He looks like he's 12. He's, you know, somehow has kids that are like 10. And whatever. That is what it is.
Yeah. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, that's probably a good spot to leave Spurgeon.
The last defenseman here on the, I guess, the tradable list is, we talked about him last week as well, Matt Dumba. And, you know, we basically, you know, shared the same thoughts of, you know, he had a bad year, but don't let that, you know, kind of cloud your judgment on him. You know, he's only 21 still, and he still looks like he can be a very useful defenseman in this team. And you know, and if you're going to move him, you know, it better be for the right player. You know, don't just give him away for nothing. And,
Yeah, I think he's, like we said last week, he's prime for a bridge deal. And that's kind of the purpose of bridge deals, when you have a 21-year-old who's showed some promise but really hasn't shown enough for you to make a decision either way as to whether you want to keep him or whether you want to deal him. So yeah, I don't think he's dealt, but then again, there's probably a lot of teams out there that we heard his name brought up with the Ryan Johansson sweepstakes. You know, there's
Druin sweepstakes.
And Druin, too, yeah. And so we've heard a lot of teams after him. And no, that's a good or a bad thing. It's good that teams want him, but I don't know. You hate to deal him, and then he turns into, I don't know, like something like Brett Burns, maybe. I don't know. The only thing that I can think of, if he is dealt, is because they have a player who's relatively similar to him, just a shade older, in Mike Riley. And, you know, not to say that you have to have both of those guys in your top four, but they're pretty similar players, and I could see a situation where you don't want to have two players that are that offensive-minded out of your top four defensemen. Not that ever happens, because Riley's obviously still on the outside looking in right now, but if they do deal Dumba, I think it's because they have Riley, and because Dumba is sought after, because teams see his potential. You've seen what little shred of power play time he was given, like a tiny piece of cheese and some kind of freakish lab experiment. He excelled. He fired a lot of shots, something that, you know, you didn't get a whole lot of, you know, and he fired shots on the net, which is better than we can say for Ryan Suter. Yeah, on the power play even. Yeah, that's something that happens from time to time.
Yeah, do you have any lasting thoughts on Dumba? Or?
I think what Ken was saying makes a lot of sense. That, you know, if you have two players that are pretty similar to each other, I mean, it definitely makes the case for why you would trade one of them. I don't necessarily think he's going to be gone, but you know, I liked what I saw from Riley, too. So, you know, if that is the case, I'll be watching Riley. You know, and hoping that he can kind of come in and fill that a little bit. And then, you know, like you said, hopefully you get something good in
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think they deal Dumba either. He's primed for a bridge deal. Give him a bridge deal. Hopefully it doesn't cost too much money because he didn't have a great year last year. So it's pretty easy to not really have to open up the checkbook for him. But yeah, sign him to a bridge deal, a couple of years, see what you have out of him. And, you know, if you get a trade offer that absolutely knocks your socks off, go for it. But I think that...
I just don't know if you'll get that.
Yeah, I don't know that you're going to get a deal like that either. So, fine by me.
I guess we'll quickly get through our last player here so Ben can finish his burger for our last segment.
Fair enough.
But the last player, the tradable assets list, I guess, if you will, is Darcy Kuemper.
Mm-hmm.
And we, again, talked about him last week, and
yep,
he's probably the most prime candidate to be traded.
And on the whole team.
Considering the market out there for goalies is high.
Yep. Yeah, and then we brought up last week, and it just makes a lot of sense because you can replace his production relatively easily and relatively cheaply. I looked at it for my article on Friday, and there's a lot of goalies out there that put up really similar numbers to him and made almost exactly what he made last year. I mean, they're all between that $1 million and $2 million mark. A lot of backups, a lot of veteran backups. And, I mean, really, that's all you need. And so if you're going to get some value out of Kuemper, if you can garner a second-round pick for him, I mean, you might as well, you know, get rid of him and get a second-round pick and bring in, you know, a guy like, I don't know, a guy like Jonas Enroth or a guy like, I don't know, Kerry Ramos probably going to be pretty cheap because, you know, of the piss poor season that he had in Calgary. But there's plenty of goalies out there that you can sign for under $2 million that'll put up the exact same numbers as Kuemper. And then you can trade Kuemper for, hopefully, a worthwhile pick. If not, you know, there's no harm in keeping him. Yeah.
Just with the contract that they gave to Dubnyk, you know, it's clear that he's the guy, and it's not Kuemper, so, you know, we'll see what happens with that. I think it's still obviously like a number one goalie situation, so I don't know, but we can see the strongest Dubnyk all here. So, you know, 6 years is a long time.
I have a few reasons, or a few opinions as to why Dubnyk maybe wasn't that effective all year.
So I don't know. I think with Kuemper, it's he probably wants to start, and that's a big thing too. Is that you don't want to get into a situation where he's unhappy on this team, because that's not good for anybody. And maybe that's a conversation that him and Fletcher have this summer, where it's like, well, you know, do you want to kind of wait a little bit and develop, you know, behind Devin, and then one day you take the reins from him? As we know, Devin's contract at the end of it is next to nothing. You know, he's making backup money for the last 2 years of his deal. So it's still in the realm of possibility, if they don't get a good offer for Kuemper, that Kuemper does ride the bench for another 2 years or so behind Dubnyk. And then you get into a spot where you really do have a goalie controversy. I could see that happening as well. I mean, Lord knows the Wild love to have goalie controversy. So it's entirely possible that happens too. And you know, quite frankly, if Fletcher's confidence in signing a reliable veteran backup isn't very high, which, I don't know, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, you could see him wanting to hold on to Kuemper because they certainly don't have anything in the farm that resembles an NHL backup, at least to this point. So it wouldn't surprise me either to see them hold on to him. You know, he's only 25 years old. Let him develop. You know, then in 3 years, he's that 27, 28 years old where goalies typically hit their peak, a la Devin Dubnyk, and he's challenging Dubnyk for the starting job when Dubnyk's light back half contract kicks in.
Yeah. That's an interesting theory, but I don't think that'll happen. I'm not going to say you're wrong, but you're wrong.
No, I don't.
Don't you wait, Pat?
Yeah, we have to play this under Twitter rules. Not only am I wrong, but I'm a moron and I have a lazy eye. so I totally agree. I don't think that's the situation, but if they do hold on to Kemper, it says a lot about what they think of him long term, that they think that he could challenge for the job in you know, 2 years or less.
Yeah. I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
I guess that'll do it for our tradable assets segment. Well, don't have any draft picks to really give away, so
there isn't a tradable asset left there.
Yeah,
they have number 15, and that's it.
So I put out there on Twitter last week, they have 4 draft picks in the upcoming draft, 2 of which are seventh rounders. So,
oh god.
One of which was acquired in the highly touted Sean Bergenheim trade.
Oh, that's right. We got a seventh rounder back from Florida, didn't we?
Yeah.
Wow. They hated him. They hated Sean Bergenheim that much in Florida.
Maybe we can find another Eric Hall in the seventh round.
Hey, anything can happen.
I don't know. Who knows? Yeah.
Hopefully they save on scouting this year, then, if that's the case, because you've got a first-round pick, which, quite frankly, I mean, let's be honest, your fans could make a first-round pick for you. And then you've got a fourth-round pick, which is like, okay, it's a fourth-round pick. And then you've got 2 sevenths. That's it.
I think we're going to kind of blow over the jersey segment again this week.
Yeah, that's fine.
Although I will maybe put out there for thought that also on his podcast last week, Rousseau did say that the Wild are maybe rethinking a few things with the Adidas change coming this season, but next season.
Well, we kind of knew that.
And,
yeah.
You know, maybe more specifically the red ones.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
It's almost like I've been saying that for 2 years now.
I'm sure we'll go more in depth on that when the time comes, but
it's exciting.
Yeah, if there's anything we don't hold back on this podcast, it's jersey talk.
That and insults relating to food. I didn't mention. I'm not picking a fight here. I'm just saying that's what we argue about.
Should have had soup.
Should have, yeah.
I should just order you some soup. Anyway, this is probably part of the podcast where Ben just sits quietly and eats his burger.
It's fair enough.
I don't get to do this much, because much as I love to sit here and rant about or discuss Mighty Ducks movies, or, I mean, we could talk about that too.
Yeah.
Or Batman.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, what other weird things have we gone over that I'm big on?
Too many to even list.
Oh, that's good. If you don't follow Heather and I on Twitter, I don't know if that's fortunate for you or not, but 98% of our interactions are Friends references. That's a very accurate percentage. I'm not exaggerating.
It's not a conservative estimate, yeah.
I don't remember the last, like,
GIFs.
Well, somebody will make a reference to a show, and then we just quote the rest of the show.
Which there's really no one else that I've found that can quote it as well as we can. I mean, other people kind of know, that was an episode, right. They might remember some quotes, sort of, but not exactly.
You know,
I am never going to quote Friends again. Swear to God.
You know what's funny is, before our final attempt at re-recording last week's podcast, Ben and I were sitting there, Ben was his audio equipment, and then we kind of started talking about, or we were trying to brainstorm topics for this week's show, and I said, yeah, we'll probably hit on Friends for a minute, and then I got in the ranty mode, and I said, you know, no one ever can stump me with Friends quotes or Friends trivia, and I said, you stumped me like 3 times in a week, and I'm bitter about it.
He does not take it well when he's stumped in Friends trivia.
I don't like to lose. since we have this podcast,
do you guys is there like a Kirk versus Picard type of argument for the Friends fans? I'm kind of wondering.
I don't think so. Like,
I don't know.
I was gonna just throw out there, like, what? Give me a power rankings of Friends characters for you. Because, just like the six main characters, because people do this, and I generally get the same for the last, for number six. But
poor Ross. It's always Ross. It's always Ross. Yeah.
My sandwich.
Yeah.
No, I. But yeah, I don't know. I guess I kind of. Oh, I had to take a leave of absence because I yelled at my boss. Oh.
They gave me these pills on account of my rage.
I wasn't fired. I'm on sabbatical.
So is there, do you guys have a definitive friends ranking then?
I guess I've never really thought about it, but yeah, I suppose Ross would be. I don't know.
Of course he would.
It's a tough choice between, because, you know, Chandler's got the sarcasm to love.
Yeah.
And Joey and Phoebe, I kind of grouped them together because they're just so quirky and.
Yeah.
You know, I used to not be sarcastic at all, and then I started watching Friends as a young kid, and Chandler just rubbed off on me so well. I'm just the most sarcastic person now, as you know on Twitter.
Right.
Nobody ever takes me seriously there.
Yeah, I think it's probably around the same for me, too. I gotta say, I didn't really like Joey all that much during the actual run of the show. But at the same,
don't you hate pants?
Yeah, but no, I think as I've come to appreciate what his character was, and like I look back, and there's a lot of funny moments, and a lot of them were Joey because that's just, you know, I was more maybe annoyed by him at the time because he was such a blithering idiot, but that's kind of the charm of him, and then that's kind of how it works, you know.
The fridge broke, so I have to eat everything.
But like, yeah, it's it's stuff like that where it's like you don't think about it, then you think about funny moments afterwards, like wow, they kind of all involved Joey because he was such a goofball that, you know, you couldn't have a lot of those comedy spots without him. And Chandler worked so well off of him. It was like the ultimate David Spade, you know, Chris Farley kind of combination with those two.
It was always funny because it was kind of like sometimes you wonder, like, geez, how far could they go? Like, how stupid could they be?
Yeah.
Like, there's sometimes like, God, really? You wouldn't know this or that? Yeah, I don't know. One of my favorite episodes of him, too, is where Joey doesn't share food.
Yeah. Joey doesn't share food.
He just
eats
the dessert.
His date goes to the bathroom.
Over his face.
I'm not even sorry.
Yeah, I remember that.
Awesome.
Yeah, I've always been a firm believer when it comes to when you have a comedy show especially. You have to have three characters. You have to have the straight guy, you have to have the idiot, and you have to have sarcasm. And I just think, like, you look at, you know, I it first dawned on me with Aqua Teen Hunger Force, oddly enough, because, I mean, they have the ultimate kind of pairing with that, where they had the straight guy, the idiot, and the sarcasm. And that's just kind of how Friends work so well, because, I mean, Ross was 100% a classic straight guy. and Joey obviously was 100% the classic sitcom idiot, and Ed Chandler obviously 100% the classic smartass. So I don't know. It didn't really always necessarily work like that for the women. I feel like the women were a little more versatile, maybe. Like they could kind of do multiple things. Like they had their, all of them kind of had their straight moments. All of them kind of had their ditzy moments, and all of them kind of had their sarcastic moments, and that. That's why you see the rankings where it's like Chandler and Joey are one and two because their roles were so well defined.
Yeah.
And then all the women are next, you know, because you didn't really have as good of a feel for them. And then Ross.
Yeah. I think with Monica, her, I mean, obviously her big defining thing was wanting everything clean. And she was like just this loud control freak. And
yeah.
Chandler was kind of the opposite.
Yeah.
You know, Phoebe had a lot of that quirkiness and dumb things about her too, but she had kind of an edge to her.
Yeah.
You know, and then Rachel could be really ditzy and dumb, but, yeah, I mean, she's kind of a lovable.
Yeah, but she wasn't, like, Joey dumb, you know, she would, yeah, she would have moments where she was just a waitress, you know, and then she would, you know, she would have times where she played the straight character out of the group.
Were you referencing the list?
Yes, I was referencing.
Nice.
Not Rachel.
What the hell's a Rachel?
What the hell's a Rachel?
You were kidding. I told you at the beginning of the week you had to brush up on your friends. You're
I didn't even brush up. I have a...
I'm giving you credit. Shut up.
I'm taking it. Comes to, you know, useless trivia like this, especially like TV shows that I happen to watch, I'm surprisingly good. And I probably haven't watched half the episodes of Friends that you guys have, but the stuff that I do remember sticks with me pretty well.
I think I told you this earlier this week, but I stumbled upon Friends in between the 5 o'clock and 6 o'clock showings of The Simpsons on my 29. Like, The Simpsons used to be at 5 and 5:30, which was great. I'd eat dinner during that time and watch The Simpsons. But then they split it, and they had 5 and 6, and I was like, okay, well, what the hell am I going to watch? And it was just fortunate that on Channel 45, Friends was being syndicated.
Yeah.
At that time, so I started to pick it up, and that's how I stumbled on it. And it led to me watching the DVDs to no end, and yeah, I know most things about it.
There was one Christmas where my girlfriend at the time wanted the Friends box set. And I that was a rabbit hole I didn't want to go down.
It's a good gift to give.
Then I'm the type where, like, if you tell me you want something for Christmas, I'm not going to buy you that thing for Christmas, because I really value originality and actually picking out a gift that you didn't pick out. But at the same time, I was like, yeah, I like Friends, but I don't want to binge watch that for, like, the next 3 months. So I'm not going to get that.
It's always a good time to binge watch Friends.
It's going to be fun to see how many.
Right.
OG binge watching.
You know, it was always fun, like, on a Saturday when you're just gonna have that, you know, relaxing day and see how many episodes I can get through. It was so cool.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, there's no commercials, so it's only like 22-24 minutes, whatever it is. So.
Yeah.
So this was something that annoys me, and it's probably a non-annoyance to most normal people, but I do have all the regular DVDs of the Friends seasons, and, you know, I kind of got them as they were being released after, like, I think it was season 6, once I got cut up, and then season 6, I got, watched them as they were going, and then I would buy the seasons as they were coming out. And so you get so acclimated to all the lines and the shows.
Mm-hmm.
And then I bought the Blu-ray set on, it was like a year ago on Amazon. There was an insane sale that I was like, I have to buy this. Like, I shouldn't have, but I had to buy it. It was such an insane deal. And then I got it, and I'm just kind of watching the shows, and they kind of cut out some lines, and it...
Really?
It was annoying.
It wasn't from Blu-ray, but...
I think it was the original broadcast versions, what they were showing on the Blu-ray, and the DVD collections was the extended cut. So they had to cut some of the stuff out, but I've just been so used to the extended cut my whole life. It just annoys me that the Blu-ray is just the regular broadcast version.
Commercials, and they even cut out more lines.
Ugh.
Which I know, because I'm obsessed. And I'm like, wait a second, they totally cut out this one scene, and it's usually a lot of the best stuff that they take out. So it's always weird to go back and watch. And the same thing happened to me because I got all the Full House DVDs. I love Full House. And most of those shows I didn't watch when they were first released on TV. And then you go back and watch the DVDs and realize how much
that seems weird. They would cut the episodes back by moving to Blu-ray. You'd think if anything they would expand it. They would keep it expanded at least.
So I guess before we wrap this up, as much as we could probably just sit here and discuss this for another hour. I guess like it's impossible to just have one favorite episode. So give me like your two or three go-to episodes.
Like, I do have one episode. I will say the Thanksgiving ones are always
yeah.
my favorite. It's my favorite Thanksgiving tradition.
Yeah, me too.
Watch them all.
Thanksgiving. I watch the episode with Brad Pitt and then the Thanksgiving episode. Christine Applegate. Those are probably the top two Thanksgiving ones. But my go-to episode is the one where everybody finds out
That's a good episode.
They don't know, we know, and they know, we know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know why. I think just the polarity is, you know, just the geeks that they're playing with each other, just stuff like that.
But, yeah, know. That's a... Joey likes to scare the duck.
Yeah. It's also something they cut out if you watch the...
Yeah. That's a good example. I was trying to think of an example of what like good line was cut out, and I just couldn't think of one on the top of my head. Yeah. But that's a good one. No, I'd agree. That's always up there for me. I'm always big on the crap. I can't think of what it's called. The one where no one's ready. Ben brought this up to me in our message chat this last week, and it, you know, with Joey having all of Chandler's clothes on and doing right. the lunges and
going commando in another man's fatigues,
you know, and then Phoebe with the hummus on her dress, and
she's gonna be political.
Yeah. Monica with her obsessing over Richard still.
Yeah.
And then Chandler having a fight with Joey about the couch cushions. The cushions are the essence of the chair.
Yeah. Yeah. What was cool about that episode too, it was all basically one scene kind of. I mean it wasn't like, oh, you know, we're
yeah, they weren't
commercial, here's the next day. And
they weren't, yeah.
It was just like the same like half hour that everyone was trying to get ready for Ross's big night.
Yeah.
Got all excited
because the fat. You can drink the fat. Hi, welcome to an adult conversation.
That's interesting. I think you should drink the fat.
Yeah, that or I don't know. I really love the episode where they all go to Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe even the one before that where they... they just throw the ball around for the entire episode.
I don't remember that one.
That was when we were talking about it earlier. That was when Phoebe's boyfriend.
Yep.
That was his last episode.
Yep.
They were up all night throwing the ball around.
Oh, that is over.
And they woke up to birds chirping. That was the end of the birds.
Yeah, those are my kind of go tos, and as we also kind of talked about this week, that Friends was just notorious for epic cliffhangers that just, you know, had I not seen most of them on DVD before I finally got caught up to the show, like it's just gut-wrenching to have to sit an entire summer waiting to see what happens after.
Yeah, I watched them because my mom was a big fan, and I was pretty young, obviously, so I just kind of watched them with her. But yeah, I remember a couple of those where it was you go all summer not knowing exactly what happened, and then obviously the whole, you know, Ross and Rachel thing, they had like five different cliffhangers with that situation.
Yeah.
So I don't know that it was a lot of fun, but it was certainly good TV because they set it up well. Yeah.
So that was the first one that I saw, and that was what got me into it, because of course then there was a huge cliffhanger. It was like, well, okay, now I got to see what happens. yeah, I think right away in season one, it was a Ross and Rachel cliffhanger.
Yeah. They milked the holy hell out of that.
Yeah.
I can't believe they milked that for 11 seasons.
Ten seasons.
Cheers was 11.
As much as everyone wanted it to be an 11th season.
Yeah. Well.
It was, well. Right. They really, yeah, they. Yeah, no, you're right. They, it didn't seem like they were going to do a 10th, and then they basically just paid all the actors in a ridiculous amount to do a 10th. And it was only like, I think it was like 16 or 17 episodes. They didn't do a full season. Because I think there was a, that big gap was they just did a countdown of like the five best episodes.
And then they did the, you know, typical, like you can see the writing on the wall. There's that one episode where
I wonder what's going to happen.
No.
Gee, weird.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
I assume we're not
supporting this, but I hope not.
It's been 12 years. That makes me feel old. Yeah. No, I that's a good show. I love that show. That's
way to wrap it up, Giles.
Yeah, good solid point to close it out. But yeah, no, that I suppose we should wrap it up. If you've made your way through this Friends conversation, you've either really like Friends or you just have really nothing else to listen to.
I wonder if we're gonna get some like Friends only listeners, like. Just
I mean, we
promote
could.
This like heavily. I mean, if you 20 title minutes of Friends
this,
talk.
If you title this right, yeah. But there is a Friends podcast out there.
I don't
listen
that.
To it.
I don't.
I know it exists,
right.
But they just basically discuss different episodes. Yeah. Well. Yeah.
This is like an audition tape, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We'll just send them this 20-minute bit. And yeah, we should be good to get on that podcast. But yeah, no, that that'll probably wrap it up. We're probably gone on far too long. But
yeah,
yeah. Thanks to Heather for joining us after the baseball game today, as painful as that was.
Can't be any worse than the baseball game.
Yeah, you can find her writings at. Wild Extra, or you have your own blog, correct?
I do, yeah.
Okay.
Called Thoughts from the Stands. Okay. So thoughtsfromthestands.blogspot.com.
Okay.
The link's on my Twitter bio.
And you can find her on Twitter at HL Rule. You can find me and Ben on Twitter as well at Ben Remington at Giles Farrell. Think carefully before you hit the follow button on all of us, because we don't talk about sports. We talk about random things.
Yeah.
Like I said, Heather and I talk about Friends, Ben and I talk about jerseys.
Yes.
Or soup.
Yeah.
So no sports. No sports related things.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true. Are you going to the Indy 500 next week? Did I see that right?
Yes, I will be at the Indy 500.
That's cool.
It's exciting.
That's always kind of big on a bucket list for sports fans to go to is the Indy 500.
Yeah.
It's fun. I recommend it. I've been twice so far. This is the 100th race, so it's
a good one to go to.
Kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's a lot of fun, so I'd recommend it. Some people just treat it like a big party, of course, and there's, you walk by 20 people that don't even make it into the track because they've been drinking for straight.
I think that's a pretty consistent thing with a lot of motorsports. Any kind of horse racing, too. We saw that with the Kentucky Derbies. People just go there and get hammered.
What's weird is I really haven't.
I'm more of a true race fan. So
yeah,
actually,
same here.
I go for the racing.
But I would like to announce I'm going to get more into motorsports.
Yeah, I go to the NHRA races every year up in Brainerd, and wow, there is 200,000 plus people there at any given time, and about 40,000 of them are actually watching racing, and the other almost 200,000 of them are just getting absolutely hammered, and it's kind of hilarious because you get to see him every once in a while.
I like.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, of course, you can find all of us writing at wildextra.com. We'll be writing about the Wild all summer.
Yep. Starting draft coverage probably next week after next, I would think. The month of June, draft season.
Yes. Get your hot draft takes in. that'll do it for this show. We'll be back, hopefully, next week, assuming we don't have to re-record this again. Thanks for the... thanks for the listen. Thanks for the download. Rate us on iTunes. All that fun stuff. We will talk to you again next week.
See ya.
St. Paul, Minnesota.
Minneapolis, Minnesota.
We are ducks, and ducks fly together.